you know, there's all kinds of scenes that I respond to in movies. I respond to music sequences. I respond to big comedy sequences. It was like they galvanized the entire theater. Everybody woke up. Everybody got connected. And, you know, and I would go see a film that had a sequence like that. I would see it two or three times at the theaters just to see that sequence. And then just to have that experience with an audience.
Welcome to Making Tarantino, the podcast. I'm your host, Philip Duke. On this podcast, we go through a list of movies that Quentin Tarantino likes or recommends to see what they're all about and if maybe they've influenced his work. There will be spoilers. Today, I'm joined for the first time by Jaylen Salah. I hope I said that right. All the way from Alexandria, Egypt. She is a translator. She is on YouTube as the J-Days, Jaylen Salah's Chronicles, and she's a very good poet. Welcome, Jaylen.
Hello, Philip. So happy to be here.
She's so positive, guys. You look at her and you just beam like full of life. Like she's like the, what's that God with all the arms with the six arms? Like you're like that, like just.
Kind of Cali. I hope to think it's Cali.
I don't know. We've already went off the rails. You know, with the, I think it's like, I don't know, whatever. It's an Egyptian thing, I think. But it's got six arms, maybe eight. I don't know. But anyway, it's all one with the universe is what I'm saying.
Thank you.
Do you have anything to tell the listeners about you or about? I was thinking something, too, like when did you first see Foxy Brown? And then you can talk about you.
OK, I first saw Jackie Brown. Like just something that I discovered out of the blue because I'm a big Tarantino fan. And then I realized, okay, which film did I not see yet? And it turns out it's Jackie Brown. And it turns out it's one of my favorites of him. Actually, I kind of loved it more than all his other films, even Pulp Fiction, even the Kill Bill saga, which I love. But for me, Jackie Brown kind of encapsulated everything I love about Tarantino. It was like this kick-ass, you know, crazy female protagonist. It was like, I love that she wasn't that young.
And a slow build of like he explains, like it wasn't like boom, 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 like Pulp Fiction. It was like, let's hang out with everybody. And you're
exactly.
I
thought it was smooth. I thought it had like great characters. Even De Niro was just insane there. Samuel L. Jackson, I think it was one of his best. So everyone shined in it. And for me, I just loved the movie. So later on, when I was reading Pam Grier, and one of my friends, actually, his name is Steven is like a retired jazz musician. And he told me about Pam Grier. And he was like, you know, like Pam Grier is this amazing, you know, like kick-ass, and she has a ranch and stuff like that. And I'm like, oh my God, I want to know more about Pam Grier. And that's when I discovered Foxy Brown. But I kept, you know, like postponing watching it until, you know, let's watch it. I'm just okay. I think I watched like half an hour before or something. Let me watch it now to prep for the podcast. And that's when I fell in love with everything about the movie. More and more, I love Pam Grier more. Like, I love her more in Jackie Brown as she is matured. It's as if, you know, like the old Foxy Brown has matured into this woman. But I loved her now in her sassiness and sexiness and youth and beauty and everything.
And openness. Yeah, yeah.
So this is about, you know, like Foxy Brown, Jackie Brown. About me, your friend Jaylen. Well, I'm a poet. I think I'm a film critic. I'm just someone, I think I like to say that I'm a citizen of the world and just open to knowing people, just talking, diversifying my life, just discovering myself and discovering other people, writing about film, talking about film, making friends through that. Yeah. And I don't know. I love yoga. I love people.
You love food. Austin Butler.
Very much. Yes. He's one of my favorites. Best actor ever now. I'm waiting for him to do more roles.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That too. So a lot of things, there are a lot of things that I like. I just like the sea because I live in Alexandria and I have one of my friends, her name is Stormy. She always tells me, you know, like you have the ocean in you because I was born on the day of a storm. So I love the sea so much. So yeah, I'm just me pure and simple.
That's good. That's what you and I were saying. Like we're both pretty much laid back and like just really chill. And that's where, like, I don't know. It's like you said also with movie reviews and with movie stuff, like your recent thing on Beverly Hills Cop was like, it's like 35 minutes on your YouTube channel. And it's just like, what did you like about it? And he's like, oh, I love the part with the banana. And you're like, oh yeah, that was best. And you're like, with him eating the, like Rosewood eating the food and like, do you have some dip with this? Could I have like all that stuff that I've said is like, it's not necessarily, you don't have to be a critique of, well, do you know that this movie was done by this and filmed by this and da da da. It's more like, well, what did you get out of it? Well, I loved, you know, E.T. I loved, you know, Eddie Murphy, you know, we're not gonna fall for a banana in the tailpipe, you know, and you say more loose like this guy. And it's the thing with this when I think, but it might have been before Jackie Brown, but I think after Pulp Fiction, after Reservoir Dogs, when they talk about Pam Grier, like, no, she did the film, and you know, the other girl who did the TV show, I don't know. Great, now I'm totally fucking tortured. And then in Pulp Fiction, I don't think they said anything about her, but she was gonna be Jimmy's wife, the nurse in Pulp Fiction.
Wait a
Oh,
minute.
no, I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry. That's what I, because that nurse, she was a black woman. But no, they were going to have her be in Pulp Fiction. She was going to be Eric Stoltz's wife. But Quentin's like, nobody's going to believe that Eric Stoltz going to yell at his wife, you know, yell at Pam Grier like that. Like, no
He's gonna
way.
kick his ass.
Yeah,
Never. He wouldn't
exactly.
dare.
Exactly. Oh, I love that scene though. This bitch is going to die on our carpet.
Best ever.
But so then me and my friend Colleen, we rent Coffee and Foxy Brown, and we watch Coffee first, and then we watch Foxy Brown. And we, it was, there's something about, we'll get to it later, but when they're in the plane, her and Sid Haig, they've been in all these films together. They were in The Big Dollhouse, they were in all those starting up. And then they're in the, and they're on that plane, and they're just, she's acting like she's drunk. And she's like, can we go in the back? And he's put this on autopilot. He's like, this ain't no 747. And then also just him, like, you can tell that it's an improv line where he's like, I gotta land this bitch or something. Like, I gotta find, like, it's hilarious. And it's where something that I guess I'll get to now. There was a Turner Classic Movies did a podcast of Pam Grier. And on there, she talked about when she first met Sid Haig, he was also from church. So before scenes, they would sing hymns and stuff before going in to do these show, these
Oh,
movies.
wow.
Yeah, in the Philippines. And they would do that. And also you're thinking like, well, there's, because there's some scenes in Coffee and different things where he's manhandling her. And you're like, that takes trust of like, okay, we're friends. Go ahead. Like, whatever.
Definitely.
And, but, so then, so I watched that, and then I watched them more. And it's funny because Coffee Brown and because Coffee and Foxy Brown are so kind of similar, where you're a little bit like, did you're a little bit like, what happened in which movie? You know, like you get confused. And
Exactly.
but because I was like, well, wait, where did they get on the fight on the where they land on the table? And that's in Coffee, where they're fighting with the salad and everything. And she's got the razor blades in her hair. But it's
She
the
always has
thing.
something in her hair, which is amazing. I love it
Exactly.
so
Yeah.
much.
It's the thing where like Friday Foster is really good. If you haven't seen that one, that's one that I recently saw. It's really good. Carl Weathers is in it. She goes chasing after him, or he's chasing after her. She gets out of the shower and she's running with a towel on, like down the hallway. It's crazy. But what else? But first, rate, review, and but that's where I've seen those films. Rate, review, subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And now on with the show. The thing is, with those, like my friend Colleen, she was like, I think I like Foxy Brown better. And I said, I think I like Coffee better. But I think what the difference is, like Foxy Brown is so off the chain, like crazy, where it makes you like, you just love it. Like, and that villain, that girl.
Exactly.
Like,
Like, I need to revisit Coffee for our future episode, obviously. But for me, Foxy Brown I think it's a work of brilliance, even though when you think about it, it's so unbelievable consequentially. But at the same time, it's just so br like I wouldn't see it differently. For me, I think in the beginning, I was like thinking, why are we calling them blaxploitation movies? Like, is it too much sometimes? Like, why are we saying blaxploitation? Is this a way of making them feel too much? Like, I understand the French extremity movement, which is too much sometimes for me. But blaxploitation movies, maybe I need to revisit more of them. But what I saw here with Foxy Brown wasn't something that pissed me off or got on my nerves. Maybe a scene or two. But mostly, it was very empowering for me as a woman. It was very feminist. It was very funny. The female character was the best of them all. The villain character, the woman, Mrs. Cathier, she was just so cool. And she was something you could see her going tête-à-tête, both of them. So it was for me, it was a very fun movie to watch. It was very interesting. It was very even feminist. It felt empowering for you as a woman. Like, even when you see her getting hurt or getting, like, violated by this man, she's coming after them and she's giving it to them really bad. So it gives you kind of like, and it's not even that graphic. Like, I expected some of the scenes to be just too much, but there were worse films and it
Yeah,
didn't show.
it's yeah, they cut when that guy goes to get on top of her, then it cuts to
Yes,
afterwards. And
exactly.
it's really cool. I have a thing here, and then I have a thing about blaxploitation. But
Tell
first,
me.
so Tarantino talks. I want to play this part about, this is Quentin talking about how Pam Grier, about her in the history of blaxploitation and why he chose her for Jackie Brown.
Pam has a really unique place in film history, though, with the films that she did in the blaxploitation time, because they had a whole like star system even set up in the black pictures. Jim Brown, Fred Williamson, Jim Kelly. These were all big stars, and Pam was one of the hugest ones there was. But with Jim Brown, like for instance, if people are doing an article about him, they refer to him as the black Clint Eastwood. And they can refer to Fred Williamson as like the black Burt Reynolds, or Jim Kelly as the black Bruce Lee. They could never find a white, even though they bent over backwards, they could never find a white equivalent for who, what Pam's star was, for what she was, because there really wasn't a white action female hero star, that her name was above the title. Pam Grier is Coffee. Pam Grier is Foxy Brown. People would go and see to see her in this action role. There wasn't one like it before, and then when she stopped making them, there wasn't anybody to take her place. She really owned a spot for women in the 70s with those films that America had really never seen before or since.
And then I guess I could play a radio spot. Maybe I'll put in here. Maybe. All right, I put one in
Tell
before,
me.
but yeah, we'll put one in.
Cool.
When Foxy Brown comes to town, all the brothers gather round, 'cause she can really shake them down.
Foxy lady, Foxy lady.
Pam Grier, that one chick hit squad who creamed you as Coffee, is back to do a job on the mob as Foxy Brown.
You tell me who you want done, and I'll do the hell out of it.
A chick with drive who don't take no jive. She's sweet brown sugar with a touch of spice, and murder if you don't treat her nice. Foxy's got guts, no ifs, ands, or buts.
Show do.
So there ain't no hope for dudes who deal dope. Have no fear, Pam Grier is here as Foxy Brown.
Foxy lady, Foxy lady.
From American International, rated R, under 17, not admitted without parent.
So the tagline, a chick with drive who don't take no jive. Like, I love that.
I love it too.
Foxy Brown, 1974, the plot: a voluptuous black woman takes a job as a high-class prostitute in order to get revenge on the mobsters who killed her boyfriend. And that's the other thing. It's a little convoluted, not too much. Like, there's movies where they just lay everything out to you. This is like, they kind of tell, like, the brother first is like, who knows where he is? He's just gone somewhere. And, he's probably doing time or whatever he says, or dead. And then all of a sudden, she's at the hospital seeing him, and they're meeting with the FBI. And he's like, here's your new stuff. And you're like, oh, wow, this is really cool. Starring Pam Grier as Foxy Brown, Antonio Vargas as Link Brown. That's why I was
Yeah.
asking you off mic about Antonio Vargas played Honey Bear. Honey Bear? Now I'm messing it up. He played, he was on Starsky and Hutch. People are yelling at me right now that I don't know his name. But he was the informant that would always tell Starsky and Hutch. Let me see if I can bring it up.
America.
And Huggy Bear. Huggy Bear. Now I remembered. Huggy Bear. I wanted to say Honey Bear and Sugar Bear, like Sugar Smacks. I was all ready to eat cereal.
Huggy Bear, yes, exactly. Huggy because Bear. I haven't seen a lot of Starsky and Hutch, but I have some of my friends who are like crazy about it.
It's really cool. Like, it's one of my favorite cop.
Is it fun?
Cop police story. Yeah, it's like a police show. So, like, it's all wrapped up in like 45 minutes. You know, it's the dark haired guy, Starsky, and Hutch, the blonde guy. And they're both kind of different, but then they're partners. It's also cool with these blaxploitation movies, too, is like a picture of the world then. Like, this is what black culture was like at this time. This is what New York looked like, or this is what whatever looked like. Same thing with this, with Starsky and Hutch. It's like, oh, this is kind of like, it's just cool. I don't know. It's gritty. That's where Michael Mann started, was writing for Starsky and Hutch.
Wow.
Peter Brown is Steve Elias. There's a part, I'll just say it now because I love it, when she's like, I love you so much, and he's kissing her, and he's like, yeah, I love you too, and he walks away, and you're like, he's walking into the camera, like, rolling his eyes, like, but she's so, like, all about him. Terry Carter as Michael Anderson. Catherine Loader as Catherine Wall.
Yes.
Sid Haig as Hayes. That's the guy, you know, he's the guy flying the plane. If you don't know Sid Haig, he was in, like, you know, later on became famous as like the Rob Zombie guy. He was in House of a Thousand Corpses.
Yeah.
He was in The Devil's Rejects.
Wait a minute. He's like Captain Spaulding, or was he?
Yeah. Captain.
Oh, Spaulding. I remember him because he kind of like haunted my dream. I have a love hate relationship with Rob Zombie. I like him, but I think he's so vicious. Like, I would like to get into his head, like interview him. But at the same time, he's kind of intimidating to me because I feel like, oh my God, I feel like you're evil. Like, the characters you write.
And he's one too that, speaking of this, so if you want, this is what I got out of it. I don't know if anybody said it, but when you watch House of a Thousand Corpses, it's like Spider Baby. So have you ever seen Jack Hill's Spider Baby?
Yes.
So it's like that, like the weird house with the girl. And that's the thing with Rob Zombie. He is a fan of all these old horror movies. But sometimes he goes too far. Sometimes you're just like, I remember I really liked Devil's Rejects because it was so weird and demented, but it was a little disturbing.
Also, it had like this, you know, like natural born killers, but you know, like it had this, you know, like idea of us in the desert just killing people, and like it was completely different from this psychedelic nightmare that was the House of 1000 Corpses. And I think he blends genres too, which I think is interesting and amazing in my head. Like, you would see House of 1000 Corpses, and in the beginning you would feel it's, you know, the regular, you know, like the
Texas
group of
Chainsaw
idiots.
Type.
And then it turns into this psychedelic dream where it's like people turning into monsters and all these colors, and you feel like you're having a trip, basically. So the idea of blending genres, and then you have Devil's Rejects, which is grittier, and at the same time, it's very this yellowish tone, this very like desert, rough. So for me, I think I love how he blends all these genres together and how he moves.
That girl running out of the hotel with that person's face on, like, creepy.
So,
and get tipped by a truck.
And the ending, of course, it's so also like anti-Final Girl. Like, you would imagine this is a Final Girl, nothing. And then you have Baby. Like, I love Baby, you know, like Baby of the house. I don't remember their name, but I love like his wife, you know, like Baby, who's Sherry Zombie. I love her, the Baby character, because I think it's really cool. Like, she's such an evil, messed up, crazy blonde. There is nothing, there is no dimensions, there is no, oh, she has been hurt, oh, she has been, this sometimes gets on my nerves. Like, let her be evil and kill people, and we'll all be happy.
Don't have a redemption arc, just have her, just, she's evil. It's a thing with, you know, there was that movie, the one about like the witches. What was that called? Salem, I think.
Salem. Just Salem. Yes.
That was pretty cool. Like he did, like it was artsy, it looked cool. Some
With her
people don't.
mannish kind, like it was the same also, you know, like this
Yeah.
idea of, oh, it's what more like Scandinavian Nordic horror, you know, like you feel it, you feel all these cryptic, you know, like paganism
Yeah.
things. So
Yeah.
it's also he's kind of like putting all these in a very big, you know, like pot and
Yeah.
stirring it, and then you have a hybrid genre that is
Yeah.
very Rob Zombie-ish,
Yeah.
although
Yeah.
it borrows from stuff.
Yeah, not as cool as Quentin, but still in that same kind of
Not
vein of like,
exactly. He's not as artsy, not as intellectual. Sorry, Rob Zombie, don't curse us. But
Yeah.
you know, because I know he goes at his critics. But
Yeah.
at the same time, he's like, cool. Yeah, Quentin is the best thief because he borrows, but he makes it his own. Like he elevates it to a higher form of art.
Yeah,
He's
that's
French.
yeah.
He's so Nouvelle Vague for me. Like, sorry, Quentin is up there. Like, you can
Yeah.
never say he's less than Godard. I'm
Yeah,
sorry.
yeah,
Yes,
yeah.
he borrows, but he makes it
It's
into his own genre. Totally different. You can.
that's the biggest thing that I always say is the way he like Rob Zombie might take that, like I like this scene and I'm gonna do that scene, and that's what something like
Replica.
me, I might write something like that. But him, he changes it totally into like making it a making it totally its own. Like changing it, like not just having the mobster in this, but going totally, you know, the mobster taking out the girlfriend, you know, the guy's wife,
Yeah.
like, but then spins it on its head. Very cool.
Exactly. Like, okay, imagine someone being Frankenstein. You're just borrowing from the corpses.
Yeah.
And then you make a monster that looks bad because you have an ear, you have a
Yeah. Yeah.
nose from the.
Very true.
But Quentin Tarantino, no, he creates a person.
Yeah.
And this person is perfect, it's flawless.
Yeah.
This is the difference
Yeah,
in my head.
for sure. The let's get to the rest of the cast. Where am I at? Juanita Brown is Claudia. So she's the one. She's braless, but then when she takes her top off, she's wearing a bra, and then I'm like, "What?" And then she's in that outfit again, but it's a different color, but she's braless.
I
I love
love this
braless.
so much.
This is why else I like having you on, 'cause I love braless women, not that you're running around braless, but I love braless women and I love boobs. And you're so open where you're like, yeah, dude, like for sure. But it is
Boobs can be
interesting
appreciated.
where I can pretty much see through your crocheted outfit, but now when it comes to you being topless, you have to wear the bra. But then again, kudos to them not being like, no, you need to take it off. Like them, like, okay, you know.
Which is why I didn't feel it was so exploitative. You know what I mean? Like, if it was, we would have seen boobs in our face throughout the movie. Yeah.
Exactly. The H.B. Haggerty as Brandy, he's the bald guy that at the heroin place at the house.
Yeah. Oh, I hate them. I'm so happy when she just killed
It's
them.
funny too because with him, I've now seen him in two other movies. I used to think he was the same black guy from Raiders of the Lost Ark that fights him by the plane, but he's not. He was in Framed with Jodan Baker, and he was in Walking Tall 2. And it's very interesting. And then Jeanne Eppur as Bobby, and she worked on stunts of like 160 movies. So the girl in the bar that fights with her, she's a stunt
That's
woman,
why
and
they always appreciate
she's been in
stuntwomen.
movies too. But yeah, it's really like, you know, I got a black belt in bar stools, bitch. Like,
Yeah,
yeah.
I love this line so much.
Written by Jack Hill, directed by Jack Hill. So here we go. Blaxploitation. This is where this came from. Some people don't like it, but Pam Grier explained it here. Blaxploitation is a genre of exploitation films that usually targets the black audiences in urban communities. Blaxploitation was very popular at the time this film was made after parts of the film industry saw untapped box office potential in the black audience. The reputation of the blaxploitation film genre has shifted from low-budget blaxploitation films to American classics worthy of deeper analysis. Although criticized for exploiting African American culture at the time, it provided one of the few ways for African Americans to get into the film industry. Greer addressed this in an interview with Essence in 1979. Quote, "Why would people think I would ever demean the black woman? I was tried and convicted without being asked to testify in my defense. Sure, a lot of those films were junk, but they were what was being offered. They provided work for me and jobs for hundreds of Blacks. We all needed to work. We all needed to eat, end quote. So
to imagine that this woman was attacked for a movie that actually empowers women.
Yeah. Like, yeah. It's
what are you talking about, God?
And I can get part of it. And I forget. I don't think I wrote down who exactly said Blaxploitation was derogatory to everyone. But people are now realizing that it's the culture. You see how people dress, even though Jack Hill didn't like that they hired a person to wear outfit. A designer to design. So that's why she has like 14 different costume changes.
It looks amazing. Her, but she has a great body. Come on.
But exactly. It's the thing where you can see, I could see when they're like, when Antonio Fargas, when Link is like, but you know, I need cocaine. I need the cocaine back so I can sell. Like, this is my way. And it's the thing though, where it's happening today in America, especially where these guys are grown up. That's all they know when they're grown up. Dare I say, I'm not generalizing whatever, but they're grown up. They grow up and they're like, how do I get out of here? And somebody's like, you know, you can deal drugs on the street, on the corner. I'll pay you money to just sell the stuff and then you'll make money. And some of them go, okay, I'm going to make money. I'm going to get out. And then some of them don't ever get out. They just keep getting bogged down in this. And that's where I could see that for like this movie when they're talking about, well, the drugs and this and that, but also
I don't feel it glamorized.
It's yeah. And it's the thing of them saying, when that main guy, I forget his name, but she's like, what are you doing? He's like, just watch. And they go over and they get that one drug dealer out of town. They're like, that's what we do. And they leave town and they go somewhere else. Well, what if they come back? They're not going to come back, you know, and that's a good thing. Like, that's positivity. Did you want to get to listener opinions before we get into this movie? There's a bunch.
Please.
All right. Here we go.
Man, I don't even have an opinion.
Well, you got to have an opinion.
The Cinemigos on Twitter wrote, quote, Foxy Brown is amazing. It's the film most connect with Pam Grier and is on top of the list of great exploitation films. If you like Jackie Brown, you for sure need to see this.
Groovy
Doom. Exactly. Groovy Doom, which is Bill Van Ryn on Twitter, wrote, the scene where Pam Grier makes a weapon out of some wire hangers, attacks her captors, and burns their crummy filling station to the ground kind of made me fall in love a little. And that's coming from a gay man. Like, there you go. Yeah. Like, yeah, that'll do it. You don't know me, which I love their name on Twitter, NOMI, like you don't know me, on Twitter wrote, this is one of my favorite movies ever made. The way Sid and Pam interact in this movie is fucking legendary. The fashions, the fights, and dialogue is an all-timer. Also, one of my favorite opening credit sequences. Then he added a gif of the opening credit of her, like, fighting. And that's one where Jack Hill said he kind of didn't like that. AIP was like, we're going to make it like a Shaw Brothers, like Kung Fu. We're going to start. And he's like, no, like, he didn't want any of that. He wanted to write a sequel to Coffee. And then they were like, no, just go with this. Sequels don't do good. Go with this. So he doesn't care for this movie much, the director, but he understands why people love it. V on Twitter wrote, quote, Pam Grier's beauty is distracting with 3 exclamation points. End
so
quote.
True.
Yep. The Mike Justice on Instagram wrote, quote, I just saw this a few weeks ago on the big screen with Grier in attendance. As the follow-up, I think it takes itself a little less seriously than Coffee. Funky credit sequence, comedy and action, a hero without a lot of self-awareness or internal conflict about their role as a vigilante. I love Coffee, but it's a little more Death Wish, whereas this one is arguably campier and less of a downer. I'd call this a comfort film, whereas I don't know that I'd just throw on Coffee when I wanted to cheer the house up, end quote. So that's one where you could see, like, this one's campy and fun. Coffee's more like a serious, like a Death Wish. Like, you got to be in that mood. Yeah. And then you wrote, and then you even wrote on, I forget where, on Instagram, and you said that you were very excited with 2 fire emojis.
Yes.
And Russ Nichols on the Making Tarantino Facebook page wrote titties for days, which, yes, I agree.
Which kind of makes sense.
Yeah. Andrew Robertson on the Video Archives fans page on Facebook wrote, quote, good, but probably my least favorite of his films, of Jack Hill's films.
Weird.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Alistair Hubble on the Alternate Video Archives page on Facebook wrote, quote, I recall them being laughed at for a bit, like Black Belt Jones and other blaxploitation films, by cinephile friends in our mountain town, super tolerant at the time, 30 minutes from the border in the 80s. I hadn't really thought about it again until I saw it at a friend's place in D.C. in the later 90s while they were doing a Pam G marathon. And halfway through, during a popcorn making break, she was waxing poetic, and one of the parts that stuck, and I was kind of enamored with her, so I paid close attention, but this still ain't 100% verbatim. But even with the sands of time, pretty damn close. She said, quote, I don't just like it because it's a good movie, and it is, not even factoring in the low budget and all that. I like it. I love it for what she did for women, for Black women and men, and you could have a decent argument that Pam changed the world. Okay, maybe not that much, but enough for my mom to feel it growing up, and maybe the same for me now. Though that was a tougher era for women like me, so it had to mean more seeing a powerful, sexy, smart Black woman on the big screen, end quote. So,
I totally agree with that last comment.
Yeah, totally. That's the thing.
A very empowering film.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very empowering. It's very enlightening. It's very cool. It's very good. It's a very good movie to watch if you're a woman.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah.
What's not to love about a very beautiful, she's not played as dumb. And also I would say she's smart, a very passionate, you know, like, I know that women were, I think I read somewhere that they were in the blaxploitation genre. They were nurturers. They always took care of men, or, you know, like they went out and fought for men and kind of like wanted to save men. But what's not to like about that? It's better than being damsels, you know what I mean? Like, I would watch thousands of movies where women were damsels, and sometimes it would make me feel like, oh, really? Yeah, sure, he'll save you. Good. But here, she's out there avenging her man, or taking care of a sister, or just standing up for others. This is a very empowering feeling. It makes you feel like responsible. And kudos to that. She's very sexy. Kind of girl, and she's easy on the eye, and she has a cool fashion sense.
Yeah. But also with the fact of, when you think about like her, like she never took acting when she did her first film, The Big Birdcage. Roger Corman gave her a book of like an acting book and told her to read it, and she read it, and that's what she got everything from. And then later, of course, learned more. But she said, but the thing of her being tough in this certain way, but then when you see her with her boyfriend, she's so, you know, smooth. they're so, yeah, it's like not where she's over him. You're not like, you know, she's too strong for the, you know, it's not like the other version, you know, that girl who's in charge of the bad guys and her boyfriend, he's kind of not ever,
using him. He's a boy. Are you serious?
Yeah, exactly.
He's like a puppy.
But she thinks that he loves her, but he doesn't give a shit. But he knows that she's the boss.
He should die.
Yeah.
And he's actually ogling all the other girls. It's like the typical gross man, you know, like idiot woman who wants to be fooled, and she's crazy for this guy.
Yeah.
This is why when she hands her the jar, it's like the moment, like, so, this is what you loved about him. Get it.
That's something to jump to the end. What do you think is in the jar? I was thinking testicles, but then when I was reading the thing, it said that's a dick. You think it's his whole dick and balls?
Yeah. Why? Because she loved his dick. And this is what you get.
Yeah.
What a moment.
I kept thinking it was balls until I read this thing about the dick. And then I'm like, well, yeah, that makes more sense. Where
I
she's
knew
like,
it
oh
from
my
the
God.
First
like,
moment. So she would want this. She would want to hurt her that way because she knows her. She's a woman. Like, come to me and I'll tell you why.
Like she said, she goes, I know that that'll hurt you. He's still alive. My boyfriend is dead. But it's
like that. He was a sleaze. Like, he's an ugly person. Like, he's such a gross person. He deserves it. He kind of like set her up to be in a place where she's constantly raped and getting drugged, and they want to make her into a drug. So I don't know. I felt like, yes, justice served to all of you asshole villains.
Well, even we're into discussing the movie now, but even when he's like watching her get dressed upstairs and then giving her looks, and then his girlfriend looks at him and he's like, oh. And then it's funny because funny that Jack Hill would add this because it's totally a woman thing, but Jack Hill is a good writer where he knows that as a woman, she would be. That would take her down a peg for him to look at somebody else. So she has to take down that woman. You're fat. You need to lose 5 pounds in a
This
week.
is so smart. I thought it was a very smart touch.
Yeah.
Like for me, it was. I hate it when we have a feminist discourse where we eliminate toxic femininity
Yeah.
sometimes. Like they would act like, yes, guys, men are trying to break us apart. Yes, but we have to kind of tackle or discuss the problems between us as women. So this happens. Instead of her getting on him or going against him because she doesn't want to lose him, she loves him so much and she's crazy about him, she would go against other women and bully them. So this was a very good detail to the point and very feminine, which is why when I'm sometimes talking to directors or something, writers, I would tell him, this is a great feminine touch. Why, where did you get it? How did you understand it? How did you tap into the feminine brain? Because there are little things that we do to each other, which is like could go sometimes under the radar. Like sometimes some guys, like my dad, would be like, "Really? She did this to you?" But I don't think so. I'd be like, "No, dad, you just don't understand the female psyche." But some of my guy friends are like, they really get it, you know, like they notice all the hints and stuff. So yeah, it was a very smart
I
move.
could
It was a
see
very
that
smart
where that could just kind of breeze over and people wouldn't like my dad wouldn't be like, what do you mean? Like you said, like I
That's
don't
my
what
dad.
happened? That's because she was fat. She told her to lose weight. No, dad, she's not fat. Like, can't you see? Like she's mad at him. Oh, you know. It was like my dad, I talked about it before, but my dad, at the end of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, just because J. Sebring in the movie, the guy playing J. Sebring, what's his name, had a beard and came to the gate, my dad said, "Oh, that's Manson. Manson's at the gate, and now he's letting them in, and they're gonna go. He's gonna still kill everybody because he's standing there." I go, "No, dad, that's J. Sebring, the guy who died with Sharon Tate." And he's like, "What?" And so part of me is going, "You don't even know. Like you think Manson killed everybody." And
Yes.
two, like you got totally different movie out of this. I was smiling at the end because it was
Yes.
Once Upon a Time, .. in Hollywood.
In
And
Hollywood.
so it's like, oh my God, Dad, it's those things where sometimes
And Austin Butler was very good in that movie
oh,
too, so let's not
exactly. Yeah.
forget.
What's your name? Tech. No, something stupider than that. Yeah, Tex. Oh, love that part.
Me too.
And that was one where my wife's like, he's not going to hurt the dog. I go, oh, it's a pit bull. You can pound on their head all day. Nothing happens. Don't do that, everybody.
Never.
But it's that thing where, like you said, with people, sometimes just it's like you and I said off mic of watching this movie for an intent to do it on a podcast makes you love it more, makes you dive in a little more, and you're like. It's the thing where some people just don't, you know, they don't get it. They're just, you know, those little things. And the part that I like how this starts out, where right away, you know, Link is like, these guys are following him. And so he goes to get, it's funny too, because it says hot dogs. So you're thinking, oh, this is a hot dog stand. And then he's like, I'll have a taco. And you're like, wait, there's tacos on the menu? But and
Oh, yeah.
coffee, you can get coffee and tacos. Like, who does that?
What's this amazing place? I want to go.
Yeah, I know, right? So he so then he's waiting there, and the cops are there, and then the cops are leaving, and he's like, oh shit. But he calls Foxy Brown, he says, come and help me. And she's a good sister, she's like, okay. And there's that
The
part,
greatest.
it's cool for us dudes. And for you probably liked it, where she just gets out of bed, takes her top off, and like walks into the camera, and you're like, oh, look, there's some boobies. And then like then she's dressed and ready to go, and she's like, I'll flash my lights when I get there, when I see you. And you see her flash the lights, and then she runs over the one guy, and then the other guy jumps on there, and Antonio Vargas jumps in the top, and so she saved him, and you're like, what is this about? And at the time, you're thinking what he's telling her, that I borrowed some money from some
you believe him, unfortunately.
And but it's not. It said he borrowed the drugs and he never sold the drugs or got it stolen or whatever he said, lost it. And so now he's in trouble. And then it cuts to, like we said, that scene where she's with her boyfriend now in the hospital and trying to get on with him. And then the nurse comes in, slaps him in the dick. You're like, oh, geez. Like, first of all, there's the mixed things.
So funny, but also
there's the mixed things. And I think Jack Hill did this to be funny on purpose, where you just got done making out with your significant other, guy, girl, whatever. Now she has to get off of you or he, whatever. And now the nurse comes. And now she slaps you, but also now she right away starts rubbing the soap on your chest. How are you not? How do you decipher? Like, wait a minute, I'm being touched. My girlfriend's right there. Like,
how does this body comprehend what's going on? It's too much.
Exactly. That was my thing.
I felt bad for him. Like, he was trust between emotions. Between feelings. Like, I feel bad for this guy.
I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, what would I do? I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, if she slapped me, I think I'd be like, okay, I guess sexy time's over. Exactly. That would have been funny. Like something like that. Like, slap. And there it goes. Oh, it's funny. But then, so now he's had, you know, they take off, you know, that he's had plastic surgery because he, she says, like, what are you going to look like when I see you again? Like, I don't know. And then the FBI guy is like, okay, you're going to be put away. You know, you're going to be now, this is your name and here's all your stuff. And
there's
then
something
she,
that she said, I don't want to cut your train of thought.
That's okay.
But I love how she told him, like, I wouldn't know you. It would be like, I'm doing it with a stranger. And maybe that's good. So maybe she got used to him with his face hidden. So this is what I loved. Like, she had a mentality that I thought, like, wow, you would have thought she would be like, no, I need your old face. I love you, baby. But no, she was really cool with it. You know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't know you. But maybe that's better. I love this playfulness in her.
I really liked it. And where he's like, the only part that really matters. And she's like, I can tell. Like, she's grabbing him down under the cheek.
Exactly. She's just so horny for him. But she loves him.
Exactly. But also, it is that thing of that would be weird that it would still be the same personality, the same body parts, but then a different face. Like, that'd be like, I loved, like, you know, you had this certain smile when you smiled or, you know, whatever. And now they changed it. And now you look weird. And, you know, but he was a good looking guy. You know, who's a really good looking guy? I was going to show you Thalamus Masulila, who was in the Blackula. And he was in Black Gun. He's like this badass dude. I'll show you. Remind me. I'll show you on the book.
Please. Yes.
But but so then they see that that one group, the like rebel group, whatever they are, is getting rid of drug dealers. And that part's cool. And then when those fights happen in all of these 70s movies that I love, it's so like, it's not John Wick. It's like loosely choreographed. Like they're just fighting and grappling and it's cool.
And sometimes it's cooler. I don't know. Like sometimes I feel like the overdone precise stuff.
If like you said, like you guys were talking on your Beverly Hills Cop about Dolomite. So the original Dolomite, they didn't know how to fight. And you saw it in the movie where they recreated it.
It was like so funny. I loved it.
Far away and they were fighting. But that was fun. But these, at least I do like the fights. But yeah, when there's something really good scripted, it's pretty good. Or, you know, really choreographed. It's really good. Mm-hmm. But also I'd like to see more of a loosely, you know, I don't know, something, you know, a little. I do like these 70s movies, but I get what you're saying. I like how down and dirty they are. But so then she brings him home to see her brother. The brother is like, and he's looking him up and down, kind of like, I wonder. And she's like, and you don't know it. But then when he pulls out, he's like, why do you have this old newspaper clipping? And he's coloring on it. And he's making the nose different and everything. And he's like, oh, this is the guy. Then he calls them to tell them. And it's funny, though, because they're like, the guy's like, I shot him between the blades and he died like in the movies. And then they go like in the movies, like stop going to the movies. But then when they shoot him again, they shoot him between the blades again, and he falls, and they just leave. Like, and it's like, you have no proof again. But they shoot him three times this time. But yeah, so now you know that her brother has ratted on him. And that's one where you could see a little bit of, like we said, like you and I off mic, I was telling you, like, I don't know if you're used to these 70s movies that are a little racist, or they're being that, you know, Jack Hill and them are being that way on purpose for the black audience. That's who they're making the movie for. But when he's like, I guess those people don't have, aren't as tight with their brother and sister, aren't as tight, these people. And you're like, oof. But you're also like, oh, well, you know, she's going to go take care of him. Like, which is so cool, those things of like the down and gritty that I'm talking about. When she shoots at him, she's shooting at him a bunch and shooting all the stuff. And he's over in the corner and she shoots again and she hits him in the ear. And the way they do it is the hole's already there, but then he moves his head and, you know, there's the hole and his ear's bleeding. And you're like, oh, it's perfect. And then later he's got it bandaged up and it's just, and that the boyfriend has already set you up with it. You've been practicing with it. Yep. Everything you showed me, I know how to work it, how to use it. And so that part's cool. She says, who did you tell? He tells her. She says, what do they do? He says, oh, they do prostitution and all this. And she's like, okay. Shows up, says like, look, I'm going to cut to the chase and tell you that, you know, I know what you guys do. I'm not going to be a model. I know that you know, I'll do the hell out of them. And you're like, oh shit. And,
what I like about this movie is they're just so simple. You know what I mean? Like, they're even telling you like, ooh, I got to go and do this. Ooh, he must be the one they're looking for.
Yeah.
So it's very basic. They don't want to make you suffer. You know, they don't want you to see complexities. It's just, let's get down to business. You want to see Pam Grier kicking some ass. You want to see hot people making out. You want to see people dying, brutal deaths. So this is what I love about it too. Like, yes, it could be a little bit on the nose, but at the same time, good. You know, like, oh, why not? I'm just enjoying myself.
Yeah. And not having to, have too much exposition. The exposition that's there is in short bursts of like, here's what you do. I know that you do this. And now we got to go see a judge. And that, like, Quentin talks about how he does exposition and it'll be in conversation and you don't even realize it. And like, all of a sudden you're like, oh, I've been
dialogue.
And it's the thing, scary. The thing that I love in Terminator, the first Terminator, he's hot wiring the car and she's like, where are you from? And he's like, I'm from the future. I was sent by your son, these robot. He explains everything to her. While he's hot wiring the car, while the Terminator's looking for him. So you're not like, oh, I'm bored. You're excited and you're getting everything downloaded to you. And that's great how this movie, is, but in shorter bursts of like, well, here's what you need to do, you know. And but then they go to the, and that's the other thing. And it's kind of, maybe people would say this is corny, but her and the girl leaving the house and the girl is like, well, this is what they do, blah, blah, blah. And her husband shows up with the kid. And so she has to explain, that's my husband and that's my kid. And then they go to see the judge and that woman is taking like downers and she's taking the downers and she's like, I don't care anymore. Like, I don't care, you know? And so then they get there. She's like, what if we didn't do what we're supposed to do or whatever? And sure enough, you know, Pam Grier's like, okay. And so then,
you know, Foxy is not going to let this shit happen. You know, she's going to flip it.
And,
situation upside
and the,
down.
The same thing when she's like, oh, so that guy molested a child, but you know, it was okay, right? Because you know, it was his child, whatever. And then he's like, what? The judge is like, what? And she's like, oh, you don't need to know about that. But then that time when he got busted for drinking and driving or whatever. And then Cynthia's like, Claudia's like, well, yeah, it was just that. Now Claudia's just telling some story, but not on purpose, just like, oh yeah, that guy did have something. And then all of a sudden the judge is like, well, wait a minute. And then she pushes the judge down, takes his pants off. And so that's why else they're telling him the truth about this guy, because I think at first I'm thinking, Foxy is making up these stories, but then it's like, no, Foxy's from that town. She knows that guy.
And knows everybody.
So she's like, no, this guy molested children. He did this. And so then when they push the guy out into the hallway and he's embarrassed and all this stuff, and he's got no pants on, they took off his boxer shorts. Now you know that he's now he's upset, and now he's gonna. But it's funny because he's taking everything in stride. Like, I think if Pam Grier was harassing me and saying something about my dick, I'd be like, okay, I guess Pam Grier.
Do whatever
okay.
you want to me, lovely.
Yeah exactly.
Exactly. It's the movie. This
I
is
think
the
about it
the
later.
Movie.
Wait, they were kind of mean. Yeah, I wonder if they were mean on purpose or, you know, if that's a game. But it's the thing where, so now the judge, when that guy, what's his name? The main guy, that Catherine's boyfriend, what's his name? When he's like, oh, well, our guys now are doing 20 years because, you know, the judge didn't believe them or
Stevie,
whatever. Yeah, Steve Elias.
Oh,
yeah.
God, yes.
And so then he's like, the judge should have done, like, I told him how important it was. And now Claudia's gone because she's holding Claudia at her house. And it's really cool, too, because we've seen the movies where the person is being held at the house and can't stand being cooped up and wants to go out. So she goes to the bar, goes to a gay bar, and she's in there and everybody's looking at her like, who the fuck is this? And the bartender's giving her this look and you're like, oh, what's, you know, and you're like, I think the bartender knows. And sure enough, she's like, keep her here. And you're exactly. like, oh, shit, like that's I'm trying to think of a movie. Keep her here. Oh, it's Goodfellas. When he's like, keep him here.
Yeah, and then, it's so scary.
Then they
exactly.
come back and they fucking kill Billy Batts. You know, Billy Batts and Joe Pesci were a comedy group. The guy that played in real life, the guy
wow.
that plays Billy Batts. Yeah, there's like you can find on YouTube.
I'd
like,
love to because I love Joe
like
Pesci.
There. Yeah, it's like him like. Crazy. Like doing comedy before he even did acting is crazy. But the thing of, so then that girl's talking to her and then here comes Foxy Brown and she's like, oh yeah, well I was talking to her and I got a black belt in karate. And she's like, I got a black belt in bar stools, bitch, and hits her with the thing. I don't think she says bitch, but you would like her to add that. Hits her with a bar stool and then the whole fight starts. She's fighting everybody. Like that's what's cool. And then finding her,
Christ, everybody like this is the greatest. Like this scene was the funniest for me,
and
because everybody it was just chaos.
Yeah,
pure chaos, women on women.
Well, even when they're leaving, the thing that happens where that woman bumps into the thing and that picture falls. Like you're like, I don't think that was meant to. Like that was just a picture falling like on top of the
yes,
girl.
I can feel it,
but. So then she takes Claudia and then that's the last we see Claudia. So supposedly she gave her, and that reminded me, the thing with Claudia reminded me of, did you ever see A Fistful of Dollars?
And yeah, I saw it at first. Clint?
And yeah. And Maria, the girl that they're in between both mobsters and
yes.
Maria's walking over and her son comes running out to get her. And it's like where they took
and
her,
boom.
Where they took her. And then later Clint saves her, you know, and all that. It was a remake of Yojimbo, which in Yojimbo they do it better, where, you know, the mother, the daughter, and the kid
yeah.
are like paying him like, thank you. And he's like, fucking go. Like, guys, you need to leave.
Exactly.
But this is just done where all of a sudden we don't see Claudia. We know that her husband was leaving and she just
went.
She
must have gone to her husband yeah. and she's in safety now.
Yeah.
Or else they killed her and she's stupid. So
yeah.
it depends.
I don't think so. But yes.
I
want to look
escaped.
At the positive.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
Exactly. Positive. Let's be positive.
And exactly. And then the thing of, and so then she finds out, how did she found out that her brother, she already kind of knew. But then she really finds out that her brother said something. But yes. before, no, I think that was before. Yeah, yeah, before I think he said that. But then they go to get the brother. Yeah, did they catch her first? I'm trying to think in order.
Why did this scene seem
not
like,
that it matters, no, but think, they because then
they
bust
connected
in.
The dots and then they realize it was her brother who did something and then they're like, boom. They
yeah, I was trying to think. Yeah, because... They went, I think they went after him because they were going to have him hostage so that they could get to Foxy Brown. But then shit went wrong when accidentally Steve shot the shotgun and shot him and then was like, oh, shit. And then shoots him again because he's like, fuck it, I'll just kill the guy. And then the girl's there and that guy cuts her throat and you're like, holy. And the guy's like, it was a shame. She was a hot piece of ass or whatever. And you're like, holy shit.
You guys are awful. I wish she kills you all. Like, this is what I have inside me. Like, wait till she gets to you. Holly.
Yeah, exactly. And then the thing of, so now they have caught her in between all this.
When they caught her, I was so pissed
off. Oh, yeah. They caught her at the bar. Yeah, because they come leaving the bar. Claudia gets over the fence.
Exactly.
And then they catch her.
And try to think about it. I don't think it's less than any scene where you have them catching, you know, like James Bond, or you have them catching, you know, like Mission Impossible. It's the same frustration. Like, she has built up a rapport with you.
Yeah.
That now when she's caught,
you're
feeling frustrated. It's that scene. They catch the protagonist. It's that arc in the hero's journey. The protagonist, the hero, is with the bad guys, and they're going to do shit to them, and you feel bad.
Yeah.
So she's no less than any action star.
Yeah, yeah, because you're like, she'll get over the fence. She's going to get out of this.
Exactly.
And then she doesn't, and you're like, oh, shit. Like, and then, so then they catch her. They have her back at their place, and they're beating her up. She's all bruised up and dirty and bruised up. And then they say, well, we're going to send her to the place where we get the drugs, and we're going to have those guys will deal with her, and they're going to keep giving her smack, the heroin, and they're going to get her addicted to it. Then we're going to send her to the island where Claudia kind of told us that's where other shit happens, like probably child, you know, sex.
Like
stuff.
The things we hear now about Hollywood and what they do. The sex parties and all these awful predators.
Yeah.
So,
Epstein's island.
This is what I imagined. Ooh, Epstein, up to Epstein, whatever.
Yeah.
He is in hell.
And so. So then they send her to that place, to that house, and those guys have her, and she wakes up, though, and she's going to sneak out. And you're like, oh, she's getting out. Like, okay, that guy's got headphones on. He's listening to music, whatever. I think he has headphones on. The other guy's outside doing something with the gas, and then she goes to leave, and as she gets out the door, all of a sudden he comes walking out. It's really cool because she doesn't see him. And he's walking real slowly,
and
he's got a whip.
At her.
Yeah, yeah. It's like Halloween, it's like Halloween when Mike Myers sits up. Michael Myers.
And you're
sits
like
up.
Tired.
You're like, oh shit. And so then, seeing this with a group, you could see you yelling at the screen. Turn. And then he whips her around the neck and pulls her down, and he's like, I just let her. Made her think she was getting away, but she wasn't. And then they tie her to the bed on all four things.
Felt a little bit, you know, like a little bit, I think, uncomfortable, because you could feel this is a white guy, like having this rope around this black woman's neck. So it felt but at the same time, it was made for the black audiences. So they just want you to go to the extreme.
Yeah,
like they want you to build up the anger, rage.
I think on a lot of that, it's like if you know Betty Page. Do you know any Betty Page? So Betty Page did a lot of that bondage stuff where she would be tied up in a chair and people were like, oh, I'm excited about that. It's like, no. And so I think part of that is like, I was getting that too with the whip around her neck and stuff.
Exactly.
Then them tying her up, you know, that for one, it's exploitation. So we got to do that. But for two, it's people who might be, and I don't know if they would do this on purpose. I think it's more of the fact, like you said, people are like, she's going to get out. I can't wait to see her get out.
Exactly.
There's that 5% of people watching who are like, ooh, a woman tied up. We got to go see that. You know, it's like, dare we say Quentin with his foot fetish. It's like, I don't have a foot fetish, but
for
you know,
all these guys, you're putting it in these... favor for all the foot fetish.
Yeah. Yeah. But well, same thing. I always think like poor Salma Hayek when he's like, I wrote this part in here where you put your foot in my mouth and I suck on your toes. And it's like, oh, like that was for you. That was not for
the dream.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What else can I write? Pam Grier put her boobies in my face. Yeah,
exactly.
So then it's that real cool part. And I think she said she came up with it was like getting the razor blade with her tongue. Like they were like, how are you going to get it? And she's like, I'll get it with my tongue, and puts it in her mouth and then starts cutting the ropes and gets loose and then goes over to the closet and gets those like four hangers. And at first I was, as I'm watching it, I'm thinking, shouldn't those hangers all be together? But then I'm like, no, that makes it better. They made it that way on purpose to make it like a hand, like a claw hand.
That's the truth.
And then she has that, and then she puts that down to siphon the gas into that bowl. And the one guy comes out and she scratches him. Then the other guy comes from the car, that HB guy comes out, and she's like, throws the gas on him. And then she's throwing matches at him. And it's like, cool, because she's just trying. And then some of them light and they catch the thing on fire. And that guy's burning and the other guy's burning and he falls out the thing. And then
this is the most rewarding moment, by the way, for me, even more than the Elias one. Because in the end, you know, like he's like the bad woman's tool. Like you feel her, or you want to get to her, not to him. Yeah. He's her puppy. You know, like when you have the boss and then the bitch, you know, like just get it out of the way.
It's like you said, like the main woman, like this guy's nothing, but the guy that you do want to get it is the guy that cut the girl's throat, that cut Link's girlfriend's throat. And so there's that. So she gets away, and now she's dressed in a really cool outfit to see the rebels, whatever they're called. She goes to talk to them, and that's another cool thing of them not just like, yeah, we're in it for you, well, let's do it. They're like, why should we help you? It sounds like revenge.
Exactly.
And she's like, no, it's doing justice. I'll do the revenge, you'll do the justice.
And I love this part so much.
Yeah. And the guy's like, oh, okay, that makes sense. Yeah, we're in. And you're like, awesome. And then she's at the bar, and there's that cool shot of like the zoom in to her just sitting at the bar that, you know, that
Jack Hill loved her.
Yeah.
You could tell when a director loves the actor.
Yeah.
He was fascinated by this woman in every certain way. It wasn't just like, I'm not talking exploitation, angles, you know, like whatever. No, he loved the actress.
Yeah.
So
he
made her look her best.
Yeah.
He wanted to celebrate her presence on the camera. And it was the best.
You could see where, and her being cool with it too, where you could see him being like, we're going to show your body as well, like your nude body, because this is important. But then also what's different is like after the rape, when she's laying there in the bed still tied up, her shirt is pulled over her boobs.
This is the
and it's
thing,
not
which is
like
the best.
Exposed. It's not.
No,
you know,
and you're in. They are not glorifying or glamorizing it in any way. It was a terrible scene. So you could feel her boobs would be in the consensual scene.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's not in the, you know what I mean? So I totally like that. I didn't feel it was a very humiliating film or anything at all.
And then now she's watching him. He comes over, Sid Haig. And he's like, hey, what's going on? And she's like, this is such a cool, like from there on is so cool. But it's their interaction of them being friends where I was like, I hope that the story is during Jackie Brown, you know, he was a judge in Jackie Brown.
Yeah.
And that Quentin didn't tell her that he was going to be the judge. So when she got there on the day and saw him as a judge, it was like, oh, my friend. And they like, it was really cool. And so, yeah, that's awesome. But yeah, I always wonder, like, did she have Sid in Denver, Colorado with her? Like, come on over. Like, let's hang out.
Exactly. You never know. This would be so cool.
But that's where you always hear with these other actors who meet people who they're like, we're friends forever. But then they go off and do other movies. And they're like, we had a good friendship at the time. Some of them stay friends and keep going. But so she's like, I always wanted to fly. And he goes, that's so weird. I was just about to fly. And gets her.
You want them to be together forever.
And gets her, and they're flying, and she's drinking her Budweiser, and she's acting like she's drunk. And she's like, can you put this on automatic pilot? And he's like, no, it's not a 747, baby. Like, just chill. We'll fool around. I'll give you something later. And she's like, I bet you would. And it's really cool. And then they land. He's like, keep down. She's like, okay. And then he goes out to give them the drugs. And all of a sudden the plane turns on and he's like, what's going on? What is she doing? And she starts going after him. And now the bad guy, Steve, has shown up with his guys. And his woman has said, Catherine has said, like, I'm worried about you. And he's like, it'll be fine. I got the guys with me. And you're like, okay. And there's that cool part that I won't get to yet. But so then the cops are there when they come in. Cops are like, go ahead, Mr. Elias. Goes on in. Don't let anybody in. I won't. And then that big van comes up and then all the guys get out and they take over the cops and they go in and they're shooting whoever they need to shoot. She runs down the guys and with the that guy with the plane, like just he just disappeared, like boom, like blows into pieces. And then she gets out. The guys help her out of the thing. And now she's wearing a different outfit. This is my favorite outfit.
She's the best ever.
Black leather with the striped halter top, whatever it is.
Girl. Like, really cool.
And so then she gets out and they, and then the guy is going to leave. Steve's going to leave and he gets to the cops and he goes, hey guys, move that other way. And they turn around, they're black guys in the police outfits. And you're like, oh shit, it's part of those. And so then they grab him and they're holding on to him. She gets back over there and the guy's like, here you go. And he goes to hand her the knife. And then he's like, I'll go ahead and do it. And you know, the guy, and they got him down to his underwear and then they pull his underwear down. And he's like, no.
Goodbye, Steve.
Yep. And then the next thing you see is her walking in because the guys have brought her in and they have her bag, her little medical bag, and it's got a jar. And oh, and when she went by, she hit Sid Haig and he fell over and dropped the money. And then he's out there picking up the money behind her. It was so funny. Then they go in the bag and they're like, it's a jar of some sort. She'll bring it here. Let me see it.
Pickle. I think one of the guys said,
yeah, it's a pickle jar. Yeah. And so
I love this so much.
She looks at it and drops it and it's like formaldehyde, but with blood in it and stuff. And it like breaks and she's like, ah. And then while she's looking at it, Foxy pulls that gun out of her afro.
Out of her hair, and
shoots the one guy really accurate and then shoots the other guy. That squib going off on his head, so good. So like moving. Twice. Hits him twice. Hits him once there and she shoots him again. The other one goes off.
Part.
Really cool. I was like, oh, I need more movies. With God. Yeah.
We need this.
And then.
Why can't we have it?
Then the girl's like, you son of a bitch. And she shoots her in the arm. And it's interesting because it's the thing of what those guys told her before. If we scare everybody out, they will not come back. So if they, if that woman leaves with her boyfriend with no dick, like they're not going to come back. Cause they'll be like, what happened in
New
York?
They're living forever.
Oh yeah. We got some shit. Yeah.
We'll get to this later.
Yeah. New York. I have bad PTSD over New York. So then, she tells her that, like we said, of, you know, at least your boyfriend's alive. But also I skipped over a little bit. I kind of talked about, but what I like is when he's getting ready to leave, he's like, don't worry, honey, I got the guys with me. And she's like, I love you so much. And he's kind of kissing on her and hugging her. But when he turns to the camera, he's like rolling his eyes, like,
you can't stand her. Exactly.
Yeah. It's like
what you get when you buy a guy.
And
he's like her toy.
But that's also where you wonder, is he cheating on her with these other model girls?
Definitely. You know, when she told her, imagine someone who makes you feel sexy or who just turns you on, she looked immediately at Elias, the blonde girl.
Yeah.
So you could tell, yes, he turns her on. This means she's in love with, she's having an affair.
Yeah, definitely. I forgot about that part. Yeah, he's like, and that's when she's like, you're fat, lose some weight. Exactly. 5 days.
And she knows it, but she just plays blind because she's crazy about it.
She's like, I'll tear them down. What else is interesting? Now I forgot if we said it on or off the mic. But so Pam Grier was molested when she was six. She was raped by 2 12-year-old boys. And she said she took that for that rape scene. Like she said, I know how that feels and I could act it. And but what's interesting to me about that is you would think somebody wouldn't want to be so open with their body. So like it's really really cool that she was just like whatever, like, you know.
I think she, of course, it works different for every person, but for her, I think maybe it was part of the healing.
It's the power. Yeah.
Like
yeah.
I'm not going to let it define me. I'm not going to let it inhibit me. I'm going to use it, utilize it for something else. So Totally. I totally like how people deal differently with trauma. Some people kind of like confront it in the face. Some people choose other mechanisms, whatever it is, to protect themselves and just, work it out. So I think she worked it out that way. And I really love and respect her for that.
It's for sure. It's, it's that thing of her just being like, I think she explained it on her first day of that movie, of the other movie, The Big Birdcage, where she was just like, okay, get naked. All right. Like it was fine. And her being friends with Sid Haig, like that made it easier.
Exactly.
But then the movie ends with this cool shot. She gets in the car. She's like, let's go. And it's just a freeze frame of her face, and the credits are going.
That's
And
what I tell you. He loves her.
and
He's in
that's
love with this actress.
there's that. There's a thing of where you want it to keep going. It's like, I don't know if you saw Jack Hill's Switchblade Sisters, but it's the
No, I
same
want
thing.
to see that.
Oh, it's really good. Switchblade Sisters ends with her being like, we need to rise up and da da da. And they're putting her in a paddy wagon. And you're like, I want to see the continuation of this. Like, show me more.
Exactly.
And it's really cool. And that's
That's
the end of the
incredible.
movie. And while not
And
prosecuted for obscenity, the film was seized and confiscated in the United Kingdom under Section 3 of the Obscene Publication Act from 1959 during the Video Nasty Panic. So, that was a
what?
whole thing. The Video Nasties, have you heard of those? Where like they, so the
Sounds more.
UK had banned Clockwork Orange, like Reservoir Dogs, like all
My
these things
God,
that had
they
like
call them
violent.
video nasty?
Yeah.
Ooh.
And yeah, there's a whole thing. And like all those kind of slasher movies in the 80s, they were like, that's bad for kids to watch because they're going to want to be, and it's the same
Kids are
thing.
bad for movies,
Yeah.
honestly. Like, if you think what is bad for something, it's kids for movies, not the other way around.
But it's also that thing of, I think susceptible people shouldn't watch certain movies because then, yes, they're going to think that they can do whatever. That guy in Aurora, Colorado, shooting people at the Batman thing. But
Oh my, yeah, exactly.
something
Like, how do
like,
you know?
but something like some of these horror movies are cathartic for people. There's The Final Girl, like you kind of mentioned, like that's what's
Definitely.
cool for them being like, oh wow, this is the final girl. Like she's cool. Like,
Yes.
Ripley's an alien. This
Yeah.
movie spoke directly to the women's power movement and struggle in the 1970s. Despite
Definitely.
criticism, Foxy was a poster child for a new type of heroine who was
Yeah.
subsequently appropriated by the blaxploitation genre. She redefined African American beauty, sexuality, and womanhood, which led to the diversification of African American actresses on screen. Greer said, quote, "The 1970s was a time of freedom, and women saying that they needed empowerment. There was more
True.
empowerment and self-discovery than any other decade I remember. All across the country, a lot of women were Foxy Brown and Coffee. They were independent, fighting to save their families, not accepting rape or being victimized. This was
Yes.
going on all across the country. I just happened to do it on film. I don't think it took any great genius or great imagination. I just exemplified it, reflecting it to society. Additionally, Foxy Brown and Coffee show that women can stand up for themselves and for what they believe. The image of Foxy in an evening gown, well equipped with a gun, is a visual representation of that idea, and one does not have to be masculine to have power. And then,
That's so
quote,
true.
female power, according to Greer, is very different from male power, and a woman should maintain it always. So that's very true and very cool, and it's different. But it
Very
is funny.
empowering.
It's like, me and the wife have been watching these murder shows of Who the Fuck Did I Marry? These guys who are abusive to their women who think like, well, I'm right and you're wrong. And it's like, well, no.
I'm gonna beat you. Yes.
And that's the thing. Like a guy, even guys doing how I remember my friend when he would do housework, his thing was muscle over whatever. So he ended up fucking up some bathroom because he was trying to use all his power to open something to show how cool he was. And when he did, he
Yes.
broke all the drywall off the thing.
My
And it's
God.
like, you need to be finessed. And it's the thing of manpower over female power is just, it's the thing also that I'm getting that I don't know about you. Growing up with movies, it would always be, I want to be that guy. Like you said, I want to be Pam Grier.
Exactly.
I want to be Bruce Willis in Moonlighting. Like he was so smart aleck. and sarcastic that I was, that's exactly where I got my humor from. I was like, oh, I'm this guy. Same thing, like totally you kind of said, like you kind of said, to be in your Beverly Hills Cop thing, to be Axel Foley, like you wish.
Exactly.
You wish.
I wish I could be this guy. I would have this sense of humor, these responses, you know?
It's the same thing, the Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock Holmes. You wish that you could walk into a room and figure
and
out
analyze
when
everything.
When he's like,
nobody would ever call me.
You have a ring on your finger. Your husband must have left you. And she's like, my husband died. And you're like, oh shit. But he just keeps eating. Like, it's so good. But yeah, it's the thing with movies. I don't think I ever had any heroes growing up. Like, everybody said, my dad was my hero.
Yeah.
I remember my dad, there were parts when I would, when I was little and I'd sleep on his bed with him and I'd hold his hand because it was a big hand and I was like, oh, yeah. But I was never like idolized my dad.
Yes, exactly. They're like, just good people. Yeah. Had, I know what you mean.
You had the heroes in films or TV that you were like, those are the guys, you know? So, and that's where the empowerment, and also you and I were saying off mic, it's the thing of just being, I got more to say, but about reviews, but it's a thing of be who you want to be. Don't be a dick. Don't be an asshole. Like if you see something, say something. You should be the hero you want to be. Like, you know, it's like, you know, just, I don't know how to word it, but you know what I mean? I hope.
Exactly.
But reviews, A.H. Wheeler.
For me,
gosh. Go ahead.
I love what you just said about us talking off screen, the idea of, you know, being a hero. What does it mean to be a hero? But I think standing up for what you believe for, just standing up for people who might not know how to stand up for themselves. Mm-hmm. I think we start building our idea of a hero. Maybe in the beginning, it was very limited what we would see when we were younger.
Yeah.
And then we'd start building our perception of heroism itself.
Yeah.
So these movies kind of helped us. Yes, we might love our parents, people in our family, but then we wanted to be these larger than life personas, these people who are bigger, bigger, bigger than whatever we could have aspired to. And for me, Pam Grier is on top, on the same level as those. I don't see her less because she has built this female character that you could look up to.
Yeah.
If you're a little girl or a teenager watching.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It's that thing of, that's where you could see in the 70s, somebody watching a movie, watching her would be, and even now today, I think people are like, oh, they were going to remake this. They were going to make a TV show of Foxy Brown in 2016, but then with Megan Good in it, but they never did. But it's also that thing of, you cannot replace Pam Grier. You know, it's like that audio set of Quentin saying, like, there's no thing, there's no supplement for Pam Grier. There's Jim Kelly for Bruce Lee, you know, but there's no, you know, and it's very, you know, it's cool for movies because they give you those heroes. It's a thing of, like, I always think of the saying in that movie Sucker Punch, where he's like, you need to stand for something or you fall for anything. It's that thing, like, you know, for sure. But okay, let me read some reviews from back in the day. A.H. Wheeler of the New York Times wrote that Grier was, quote, in a rut, end quote, and, quote, fast becoming a bore despite all the sex, brawls, and gore in Foxy Brown, end quote. So yeah, I don't even think, like, some of these reviewers back in the day would see these movies and not get what they should out of them because they're putting them up next to, you know, Lawrence of Arabia and, you know, whatever. And they're like, oh, this is, it's just like when Letterboxd has their ratings and it's like, no, this needs to be a variety of grindhouse movies, exploitation, regular movies. Mm-hmm. Like,
that's so true.
Variety wrote that even by exploitation standards, the film is, quote, something of a mess. Hill's screenplay has peculiar narrative gaps that are not concealed by heap on, right on, brother, dialogue, while his direction is frenzied without being exciting, end quote. The review concluded that Grier was reasonably competent and self-assured and would be interesting to see in a different role. So yeah, it's the thing also of with that of when this part, because I had read this review and then I watched the movie, was the thing of All Right, Brother, or Dig It. Like they say that twice. So that's another thing where weird. Are the guys watching it all the way through, or are these guys just stopping and then being like, oh, they say, you know, say a lot
exactly.
of that. It's like, no, they don't. Gene Siskel of the Chicago Tribune gave the film 1 star out of 4 and wrote, quote, some critics have found meaning in recent black films featuring large, well-endowed women as heroic figures. I find nothing groundbreaking about that. Foxy Brown is selling Pam Grier's body just like it was sold a couple of years ago in a half dozen Philippine women in prison pictures, end quote. So that's another thing of like me speaking for blacks, like, here's Gene Siskel trying to speak for the black people.
Who are you?
When, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. It's like, exactly. It's like, oh, you can't do that.
A person of color, a black person reviewing
yeah.
the art, this movie, then I can talk. Then I can accept
yeah.
anything.
Yeah, then you're like, okay, you know. Stop. But yeah, exactly. It's, but also back then it was kind of, you know, I don't know. It was kind of that thing.
They were
we
so
talked
brutal
about it
against
when
it.
We did
exactly.
when we did our the recent episode we did, Don't Go in the House, which is a pretty brutal movie. But people watching that back then were just like, oh, it's a cheap movie. And now that things are coming around and films are being reintroduced
evaluated,
or reevaluated
exactly.
and people are like, oh, that was great. It's just like these blaxploitation movies. That one person, I forget where the saying came from, but it was a person saying it was derogatory in the history of blaxploitation. But it's the thing of, no, it's culturally significant. It needs to be seen. It's film history. It's all of that, you know. And on this book that I read, A Reference Guide to Blaxploitation, is they're like, did you have any racism going on at the, you know, and people are like, no, most of them were like, no, no racism going on.
Exactly.
So, interesting. But I have a couple more reviews because I was like, well, which ones do I take out? I go, no, these are good because they have something to say and we can fight against them. Linda Gross of the Los Angeles Times stated, quote, for the most part, Foxy Brown is just another movie about vengeance, vigilantes, dope, call girls, and violence, interspersed with sex, vulgarity, and hatred, end quote. So hatred against the bad guys, you know.
Exactly.
But, yeah.
I don't know. Sometimes people misread things and maybe times were different then. I don't know.
Yeah. It's yeah. I don't know. And the thing of somebody also, it's like we said, like I was saying about Madam Web, Ishtar, some of these movies came out and people just panned them right away. Like there's a thing on the trailer, that buddy that sent me those movies, I was telling you off mic, he sent me Waterworld, the Arrow version of Waterworld. So it's got like three different versions. When that movie came out, everybody's like, oh, it's a horrible movie. It didn't make any money. It's horrible. And the guy was even saying, the director said, before we even started making it, there was word out of they went over budget. And he was like, we haven't even started yet. But same thing with Madam Web. Nobody goes and sees it. They're just like, oh, it's shitty. And not realizing, well, you start out to make this movie and you end up making this movie. But anyway. The Atlanta Daily World wrote that Grier had the star caliber to carry a film and to have the title role. Verena Glasner of the Monthly Film Bulletin wrote, quote, for all its additional heavyweight violence, Foxy Brown is in every way a far less interesting work than writer-director Jack Hill's previous film with Pam Grier's Coffee. Hill's colorless script does little for an actress who unmistakably has, regardless of her material, all the strength and resilience of a Jane Russell, which that's cool. When I would think like Jane Russell, I don't know if you know Jane Russell from Gentlemen Prefer Blondes and stuff.
Prefer Blondes, yes. The antithesis to Marilyn.
She's kind of that type. Like she's strong. She's a strong woman in film. So in this movie, did you see anything you think Tarantino might have liked or used in a film? I just think she's badass. The movie's fun and badass.
Definitely. And definitely, I think I have a feeling that some of the parts in the movie that were used, first of all, I think the idea of introducing a character, the way you introduce a character in a way that makes the hero just, I don't know, like the way the zooming comes sometimes, the camera work, you could see this in Tarantino movie. You could see this used by Tarantino many times.
Yeah.
Of course, For me, I think the idea of how he got the interaction between characters, he might have even transported that or transcended it to Django. Like, I felt some vibes from this in Django Unchained,
I
like
was
the
gonna.
interactions itself, the badassery of the black characters. This
Yeah,
is what I
well,
felt.
and when you talked about that camera zooming in, that's when Candy turns around to look when he first walks in the room and the camera zooms into him.
Yes,
And
totally. And one of the characters, I think I wrote her down because I felt this was, oh my gosh, Tarantino, you took it from this one specifically. Okay. There is this actress, Vivica A. Fox, played
Oh, yeah.
Bernetta Green in Kill Bill. I feel some Foxy Brown. Foxy Brown had an influence on many of his female characters. He wouldn't have made Jackie Brown if it wasn't such a big, like when he says that he was influenced by Wong Kar-wai. You could, or he liked Chungking Express so much. You start to see the parts where he took from Wong Kar-wai. So it's the same. Like, I feel he was haunted by Pam Grier, especially as Foxy Brown, that he kind of tried to emulate or reborn, like bring her back a lot.
And the same thing in Jackie Brown, where you're saying with her at the end when she's pulling the gun out, she keeps saying like she keeps doing it to make sure she can do it quick enough. The
Exactly.
thing of her pushing on the buzzer to be like Jackie Brown when she's at Ordell's place, and like it's
Definitely.
her close up of her face where you know that he's giving her the same respect that Jack Hill gave her, and
Yeah.
it's amazing. I
And
rate
even
this
I think the
movie.
fashion definitely is like she's wearing this cap, you know, like there's this cap in Jackie Brown, where I feel it was influenced by the bar scene where she was wearing the
She
cap.
had that yellow.
He has it. He has her in his mind, in the back of his mind, where he's like reciprocating all these things. So how do you rate this movie?
It's for sure. I rate it 4.5 out of 5 because I would give Coffee a 5. What do you rate it?
I would give it the 5 and see what I'm gonna give Coffee. I love this movie, like for its purpose, for the black exploitation genre, for the action genre, I'd give it a 5. I want nothing more from an action movie, and it's very empowering, it's very feminist, and I'm gonna repeat it. So I'm gonna give it a 5.
It's very good. I agree. I wonder if I maybe I should move my rating up. Maybe it should both be
Ha
5. They're
ha ha.
different. They're different, but it's fun because like they said, coffee's more like a death wish, and this
Yes,
is
and
more
this is
like
the
just a
campy
fun.
version.
Yeah, it's like it's just it's fun. Would you
Okay.
buy this movie, rent it, or find it for free?
No, I would definitely either rent it or buy it. It depends.
I
Definitely
own.
buy it. Why? Because seriously, this is a movie I can see myself watching on a bad day, on a rainy day. Imagine
That's.
yourself, like you watch, for me, on a bad day when you're just drinking, you know, like chicken soup or coffee and you feel bad for yourself, listening to music. You want to watch the stupidest slapstick comedy, you know, anybody like Jim Carrey, you know, like I would watch Robin Williams stand-up comedy and stuff like that. I would watch this movie. Would put me in a better mood.
It's like that listener opinion said, he doesn't put on coffee to have a good time for the
No,
house, to
this
bring up
one.
the house, this one. And that's for sure. Yeah, I own it. I need it physically. I own it digitally. I bought it on iTunes, and then I bought Coffee on Vudu. But I was looking Arrow release, but only in the United Kingdom that they release like a Foxy Brown and a Coffee. But
Wow.
it's region two, so I either need to get a region free player and buy that, or wait and maybe they'll come out in the US soon. Did you want to hear Phil's film favorite of the week?
All right.
All right, here it is.
Tell me.
Airport 1977. I don't know if you know these airport movies,
No,
but
I don't.
so
Tell me about it.
there were four movies done. A friend of mine, my friend Eric, did that I'm working on that Walking Tall retrospective. He did a retrospective on the four airport movies. And so they're a lot of fun. They're cheesy, they're overly melodramatic. But this one, and so they were made one in 70, one in 75, one in 77, and one in 79. This
Cool.
one that I'm talking about is from 77, and it's art thieves hijack a 747, hit fog, and crash into the ocean, trapping them and the passengers under 100 feet of water. So The first one was like over, and this is where they got the idea for Airplane. The guys that were watching this were like, oh, this will be a comedy because so melodramatic. Mm-hmm. So the first one was really melodramatic and drama, and I didn't like it much. And they had to bring a plane down, land it. Okay. The second one was a little better, but it was, now I'm trying to think of what that one was, 75. Same kind of thing where they had to bring a plane, they had to land a plane. Now I forget. Dang it. Sorry, everybody. But 77, they now had, it was like Die Hard on a plane, but without John McClane. And they hijacked this plane. It's got Jack Lemmon in it. And I give this 4 stars. I really enjoy it. I was like, man, like out of all four, it was the best one out of the bunch. But my friend in Pittsburgh, he was like, hey, I found this at Best Buy for $8. I'm going to send it to you. So he sent me the DVD of all four of them. So I was like, cool. So I watched those the other day. Have you watched anything recently that you would like to share? Or I was thinking this, is there an Egyptian film that I should find or watch? That's
definitely. Really, oh my God. I think you will find all of Yusuf Shaheen's films. They are available. They used to be available on Netflix. I think maybe they are available on Mubi, but I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. You could get them. I think they're available.
And there's some on Criterion Channel that I have.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. You have to tap into any Yusuf Shaheen film because he's amazing queer filmmaker. Mm-hmm. The best with homoerotic tension, the best with even sexual tension. You could have the Oedipus complex very visible. He has like a stream of consciousness directing style. Mm-hmm. And it's just, he's a spectacle. You have all these semi-autobiographical movies, but he has musical, he has dancing, he has all kinds of crazy interactions. You wouldn't expect these kinds of interaction between Egyptian characters, which is what I love because they're so true. They would change your perception of what you thought was Egyptian. So yeah. I recommend especially his like earlier movies.
And what was his name?
90. Yusuf Shaheen. I'll write him down for you.
Okay, yes. There's one that I haven't seen. It's not Egyptian, but it's Indian, I think. The Panther Panchella or whatever. Like, I hear that one's really good.
I haven't seen it. We have to watch it then and tell each other.
I know, right? Yeah, when we come back on the next one. Exactly. But anything you've been watching other than those?
Definitely, huh? I'm watching like a Guy Pearce marathon now because I'm gonna be on the Women in Session podcast to talk about my Guy Pearce picks. I watched this movie Ravenous, which is so good.
Oh,
cannibal horror.
I own that one. Yeah, it's like cannibal. Yeah. And did you watch Lockout yet?
No, not yet.
Oh, it's really fun. Like, talk about a fun, like, put on a movie, get some popcorn and a beer. Like, that one is
what I want.
It's exactly. And that one is like, it's like Escape from New York, where they have to take him to a space prison to save the president's daughter. Like, it's
now
awesome.
This is gonna be like next on my list. Definitely.
Yeah, it's really fun. You want to tell people what's coming up? I'm gonna tell people what's coming up, and then we'll get to you. Come back next week on April 19th when I will be joined once again by Eric Clapp from Cinema Force on YouTube for That's right. It's a double feature from 1988 and 1990. It's Maniac Cop and Maniac Cop 2. The plot of the first one is a killer dressed in a police uniform begins murdering innocent people on the streets of New York City. And the second one is about a supernatural maniac killer cop teams up with a Times Square serial killer. So what's interesting, did you ever see Tango and Cash?
Yeah, I love Tango.
So, you know, in the beginning where Stallone shoots that diesel truck and the guys fall out of it, and the one guy has this real big jaw. That's the main guy from Maniac Cop. I didn't know. I've never seen these movies. And I was like, oh my God. And I think he put him in Lockup as well, a movie that Stallone did. Here are the trailers for those two films.
You have the right.
Go kill again. He enjoys killing.
To remain silent.
You really think
think a cop did this?
Forever. Maniac Cop rated R.
You have the right to remain silent.
He's still alive.
Forever. Again.
You can't kill the dead.
Why has this been kept from the public and the press?
When this leaks out, people are not going to want to pick up the phone and dial 911. We're looking at a bloodbath here. Well, that's not a serial killer.
I touched his hand, and I was back there again, with the dead.
What's he want? I don't know! Freeze up!
What'd you see?
Sean, I saw Matt Cordell.
He had a reason for coming here. He's got a reason for everything he does.
Did you ever see anything so nasty?
Cordell's gonna pay you a visit, and you'll see him.
He must be visiting hours, because my friend is back!
We're getting stronger, because we got ourselves a leader.
Well, the cops in the world can't stop Cordell.
You murdered him. You're pushing me too far.
Maniac Cop 2. You'll be screaming blue murder.
You can find Maniac Cop. It's available on Peacock, Vudu, Tubi, and Pluto with ads. Or you can rent or buy it digitally on Amazon or Vudu. Maniac Cop 2 is available on Amazon Prime, Shudder, or Vudu, Tubi, and Pluto with ads. Or you can rent or buy it digitally on Amazon, Apple, or YouTube. Now, have you seen any of those Maniac Cop movies? No.
No, and you got me excited to watch them as well.
And those are supposed to like fun cheese, like, you know, the 80s, like, you know, slasher kind of.
Want.
Yeah,
exactly. That's what I need.
Where can people find you?
OK, I'm on Twitter, Jailan_Salah. And then you can find me on Instagram, @JailanSalman. And you have my YouTube channel, The J Days, Chronicles of Jay's Reviews and Interviews with Artists. And hope to see you. You can also read my stuff on In Session Film website, Geeks Vibe Nation.
Which is awesome. What's cool is you did a interview. I didn't watch the whole thing, but I started to. But with the RRR people, did you do the whole thing? Was it
it was
the actors though, right? Or at least the main guy? Or two of them?
It was like the special effects, the costumes, the music, you know, stuff like that.
Because that one guy that was talking, he looked like the main guy, but I think because he was talking about the historical significance, like who they were. But if anybody hasn't seen RRR, it's amazing. And then recently, and I can't think of the movie that I went and saw at the theater, started with a J. Dang it. It's now on Netflix, but it was pretty good. But yeah, those movies. My wife, I was watching, they were called Doom. And D-H-O-O-M. And it was like these three movies. And I'm watching. And my wife goes, what are you doing? I go, I've never seen an Indian film. I want to watch it. This was years ago. And I'm watching it. And I'm getting into it. Like, oh, they got singing. They got all that. She's like, I go, well, now I'm watching. She goes, what are you doing? I'm watching the second one. I got to go through the whole trilogy. She goes, this guy's on a boat. And then the boat, like he jumps the boat over the thing. I go, yeah, you're like, it's fun. She's like, whatever. And then I started to watch RRR and she was like, I like the dancing, like that part's cool. But then she like, she couldn't stick with the whole thing. But I was like, yeah, oh, it's really cool. But yeah. Thank you for joining us. We hope you had fun and maybe learned something about a movie that may have had a part in making Tarantino. Goodbye.
Bye.